Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and today's guest is coming to us all the way from Purtis Creek State Park. We have Superintendent Aaron. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jason. Happy to be here, man. Thanks for the invite.
Oh, absolutely. So as we do now, probably for the last month or so, it's tradition. We're going to kick this episode off with a little bit of lightning round. So if you're not warmed up, I guarantee you after this, you will be. To the listeners, as you know, Aaron has not seen these questions. And this week, they're not hard, you know, so.
No worries. I've done my stretches. I think I'm ready.
All right, let's go. Favorite season for hiking in the park?
Favorite season is always fall. You get the cooler temperatures. You get the leaves changing and the oaks. Has a little bit more atmosphere to it. And that's when I like to get out with my family and hike the trails.
If you had one free day in the park, what activity are you picking? Kayaking, hiking, or fishing?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, it's going to be a combo, but I'm going to get out on those kayaks with my daughters and, you know, maybe put a line in the water out in the middle of the lake. That's where all the big bass are.
Most surprising animal you've seen in the park?
In this park? So I've worked at four different parks now. The most surprising I've seen at this park, you know, we have an abundance of roadrunners at this park, and it's almost a daily thing, and it's still something that I love to see when you're driving through day use or over towards behind the dam. There's even one that likes to hang out at the front office and entertain the ladies. His name's Rody. But we see a lot of roadrunners.
I ran into my first road runner at South Llano. I didn't realize how big they were, and this thing was massive. And he was looking, I guess, for something to eat.
I feel like I got to mention this, and it's not at this park, but the strangest animal I've seen in my 13-year career was when I worked at Martin Creek Lake State Park over in the Piney Woods. And we had an African spurred tortoise. If you're not familiar with those, they're very large tortoises. It was an escaped pet, and it was about the size of the bed of one of our UTVs, and it came trundling down the front entrance one day when I was out mowing. That was something I didn't expect to see. So we had fun gathering him up, making sure he was safe, getting him out of the road, and finding his owner. You never know what you're going to see in state parks sometimes.
Best trail snack?
I'm going, it's a combination. So for the salt, I go cashews. And then, if I need a little sugar boost, I always keep a pocket of Jolly Ranchers.
What's one thing visitors always forget to bring?
I would say, pretty universal for all the parks I've worked at, but here at Purtis, it's always important to bring more water than you think you need. Especially when you're hiking in the summer months, things get hot in Texas. So good footwear is a close second. A lot of people try to hike in Crocs, but I say the most important thing is water. Bring more water than you think you need.
Pick one. Pine trees or lakeside views?
Oh, gosh. My East Texas is going to come out on that. So I'm picking pine trees. The smell, the sound of the wind in the trees, the sway, that's my place.
Yeah, and I'm about an hour south of the Lone Star Hiking Trail, so I'm usually out there every Sunday. And yeah, I'm a pine tree guy as well.
Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs of North Houston, so you know, Huntsville State Park, points north were always my go-to spots.
One feature at the park that you wish every visitor would stop and appreciate.
Ooh, gotcha. You know, our park is pretty small and fairly compact. It's nice, you know, it's nice and cozy. But there's features that I wish people could see, but for reasons, you know, regarding the safety of it, we don't allow access. But we do a lot of natural resource work at this park that a lot of people don't know about. And, you know, we've got close to 1,600 acres, and most of that is not accessible to the public. And it is, it's restoration areas and places where the natural resource team and the wildland fire team do a lot of work, do prescribed burns, prairie restoration. Something that's back there that I know about and that people aren't fully aware of is there are trees back there that date back to the 1600s. They've done that. They've found that through studies in the wildland fire team going back there and doing surveys. And that's something that you wouldn't expect in this area of Texas.
Wow.
But yeah, but it's crazy that to know that there are things, even in this area of Texas, with all the agriculture and development and everything, that still have gone untouched for that long.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, pick your poison. A trail full of mosquitoes or horseflies?
I would rather scratch an itch than get that bite, man. I grew up in Houston, so I think I'm pretty immune. I'll take the mosquitoes.
Would you rather clean the park restrooms after a busy holiday weekend or lead a group of 20 unsupervised fifth graders on a hike?
Well, I've done both many times. I think there's good and bad to both. You know, I started in the field in maintenance, so, you know, cleaning a restroom is no problem for me. That's just a service. But, you know, you don't get as good conversation cleaning the bathrooms as you do leading the school group around. So I'm going to go with the school group. Constantly entertained.
All right. Favorite time in the park for you, sunrise or sunset?
Gotcha. I, at this park, I like the sunsets. You know, there's a time, you know, as a park superintendent, I live on site. So I have the great fortune of being able to, after a hard day's work, you know, I can drive down to the day use area, and the way the park is oriented, you get that sunset right behind the dam, and you can just sit in the day use area and watch it go down over the lake. It's just a beautiful sight.
Nice. So what part of the park do you hope never changes?
I'm going to go back with that wild area, the area that we do that management in. You know, that's a huge part of our mission is preserving, right? Preserving these natural and cultural resources for future generations. You know, one of my mentors in the agency said it best. He said, you know, we're honored to be a part of perpetuity. So our little time here, you know, my time as superintendent of Curtis Creek State Park is kind of, it's very minuscule in the grand scheme of things, but to be able to continue and sustain those untouched areas, relatively untouched areas, and make sure that they're still there well past my time, you know, that's the great honor. That's the part I want to seek.
Yeah, nice. All right, last question. This is probably the most important question of the episode. You know, if you've listened to any of the past podcasts, you probably know what it is. But it will dictate the remaining, how long we go, the duration of the podcast. So what is your favorite Texas hiking podcast?
Oh, my favorite one? Well, you know, I'm going to venture, turn my camera on here for just a second. I'm already, you know, quietly endorsing on my water bottle. So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
I just have to say it's that one. That is the Trailblazing Texas podcast.
Yeah. To the listeners, on his water bottle, he has a merch sticker. Thank you, Aaron, for repping. And it just warms my heart.
Absolutely, man. This is the only podcast that I have a sticker for that I rep. So it's got to be my favorite.
Awesome. I love it. So as we start to dive into the episode, and I just feel it's important to kind of get some background on you, just some, you know, general questions with your involvement with Texas Parks and Wildlife and stuff. So, and, you know, it kind of gives the listeners some information about you. So just how long have you worked for the Texas Parks and Wildlife?
Gotcha. So this coming September, September 11th, will be 14 years with the agency. And I've got my start back in September 10th of 2011. 9/10/11 was my hire date. And I started as a maintenance specialist 3, which is your standard maintenance ranger at Martin Creek Lake State Park. As I jokingly say, I was the assistant toilet scrubber at Martin Creek Lake State Park. Worked there for 6 years, worked my way up to the utility plant operator. So I got the licensing and everything to do the water and wastewater treatment, maintained that at Martin Creek. Then had the opportunity to go to Lake Ray Roberts, which is a favorite destination for a lot of North Texas folks. Took a lead maintenance ranger position there for 3 years. And then I had the adventure of a lifetime. My career was out at Garner State Park, which for your listeners that may not know, Garner is the number one visitation park in our system. It's the big, busy park. I took a position there as an assistant superintendent of operations. So I was in charge of everything outside the office, everything in the field.
Wow.
And man, what a time. Keeps you on your toes. It was a lot of fun. Beautiful part of the state, out west of San Antonio on the Frio River, just beautiful wild hill country, crystal clear river. Lots of people out there enjoying the park, having fun, lots of opportunities to do things and experience things. And had a great 4 years there. And then just this past year and a half ago, was blessed to have the opportunity to steer my own ship here at Purtis Creek. So I've been the superintendent here for about a year and a half.
As a superintendent, what does a typical day look like for you?
There are no typical days. the beauty of state parks and careers in state parks is it's something different every day, man. Each park is different, of course. Some parks dictate your day a little more stringently than others. But, you know, my primary focus as superintendent is twofold. One is, you know, it's my job, and I take it very seriously, to make sure that my employees, the people that are staffing this park and operating this park, have the tools, training, and support that they need. Another superintendent I know put it this way. He says, the superintendent is simultaneously the most important and least important person at the park. My crew out there, they're the ones doing the work day to day, checking in the customers, providing excellent customer service, making sure the toilets are clean and operating, you know, making sure the park looks good enough to provide that experience that people, that we expect people to have. My primary job is making sure they have what they need to do their jobs and to excel. The second part of that, number two, is, you know, superintendent, you know, my job also focuses outwards. So while my team is good keeping this park running and operating smoothly and up to our standards, I'm out there, you know, promoting the park with our local community, generating partnerships with volunteer groups, you know, chambers of commerce, you know, rotary clubs, making sure that our community knows that we are actively engaged in being their park, because this is their park. So, you know, I work really hard, you know, have lots of grand ideas, lots of things that I want to do, would love to see at the park, but those are not possible without the engagement of the community. And provide them the opportunity not to just enjoy the park and recreate at the park, but do good things in the park and for the park, gives them, really provides them that sense of ownership and that sense of stewardship that we're trying to grow with all the people of Texas.
So what inspired you to get into park work?
Oh man. Well, you know, one answer is backpacking, you know, hiking trails, man. I've always been outdoorsy. You know, I grew up in the suburbs of Houston and North Houston. And so, you know, I think that's what attracted me to the outdoors, is that I could go places where there were more than three stars in the sky, and, you know, where there were hills and elevations and things that I didn't grow up with. You know, I love mountains. I love, you know, getting out in nature. I've always loved doing that. Love camping and backpacking. And so, you know, that's one part of it. The opportunity to work outside in these wild spaces is really fulfilling for me. The other fulfilling part, and, you know, we're going to get a little deep and philosophical here, is, you know, I was raised, you know, to be a servant, you know, to be helpful. My desire is to be part of something bigger than myself, to serve the community and the public, and to be able to have that opportunity in a natural setting. Out in the great natural spaces of Texas, you know, that's the other side of that fulfillment coin for me. You know, at heart, I'm a servant. You know, I want to serve. And this allows me to do that. You know, even when I was in maintenance, and like I said, being an assistant toilet scrubber, you know, I was more than happy to do that because I was providing a service, providing a positive experience for someone. You know, it's just back then I was doing it with a toilet brush, and now I'm doing it with, you know, emails and speeches to Rotary clubs. You know, I have the same job I've always had. You know,
yeah,
just got more tools in my tool bag.
So what do you enjoy most about your job?
The people, really. You know, as much as I love the outdoors and being outdoors, you know, that's an easy answer. You know, I still absolutely adore being outside and being in nature. But what I found in all these years of being in this agency is that what I really am drawn to and spend a lot of my energy on is building relationships. You know, my relationships with my staff, relationships with my visitors, my relationships with my community. I really am a people person at heart, and I've really grown to enjoy that aspect of my job almost more than being in nature. How can I be a genuine servant, put myself out there, make a connection with someone, you know, anyone, everyone? That's what I enjoy. You know, we have core values, and some of the other parks that you interview may touch on these. We have core values. Texas Parks and Wildlife, and those values are stewardship, integrity, teamwork, excellence, and service. Those are the five core values that we hold ourselves to. And the sixth one I would add to that is relationship. You know, everything starts with relationship when you're trying to connect someone with the outdoors.
Nice. So looking back at your time at Purtis Creek, what has been your favorite memory?
Oh man. So
war moment.
You know, I was, it's kind of funny, when I first got here, this is a good one. I was approached by one of our local media outlets. I wanted to do a feature on Purtis Creek. It was in the springtime. The weather was beautiful. Guy wanted to come out and do an interview and just talk about the park. You know, and I was newly here. You know, it was maybe 2 months on the job here at Purtis Creek, but I was already falling in love with the place. And I said, yeah, I'd be happy to do an interview. How would you feel about going out in the park, you know, and filming out there? Because I'd really love the park to speak for itself. And he said, yeah, I think we can do that. I said, great. So we went out to the fishing pier and we set the camera up out there, and I, you know, had the lake in the background. You could see the far shore, the camping loop across the way. And as I was talking about my desire to have filmed the park and the desire to have the park kind of speak for itself, like in that very moment I was saying those words, a bald eagle came from behind, dove down into the water behind me, grabbed a fish and flew off right in frame, man. Just like couldn't have drawn it up better.
Are you kidding?
I was like, there you go. Like, that's why we're here.
Wow.
It was a pretty cool moment.
That's crazy.
Can't write that stuff.
No, absolutely. Can people find that video out anywhere, like on YouTube?
Yeah, it was posted. I can find that link probably and provide it to you.
Oh, absolutely. That would be awesome.
I mean, I almost shut the interview down right then and there. I was like, I can't top that. There's nothing that I can add that. That didn't already say.
Nice. So for someone that's never been, what makes Purtis Creek such a special destination outside of the eagle on cue grabbing the fish?
Yeah, well, I haven't been able to recreate that one yet, but keep trying. What I love about this park is it's a combination of things. Like, one is that it's very geographically convenient for a large part of the Texas population. you know, we're situated here, you know, an hour's drive southeast of Dallas, a couple hours drive from North Houston, you know, an hour's drive from the Tyler area. There's a lot of people in high density populations within a day's drive. And, you know, due to our size, you know, we're not the biggest park in the system by any means. We're a nice, small, quiet park, peace and quiet. It's kind of our bread and butter, and to be able to have that spot to go to get peace and quiet, sounds of nature, some nice relaxing fishing, camping, kayaking, you know, within a day's drive of the daily grind of the city, you know, that's an opportunity to serve millions of people, you know, have that, you know, pretty much in their backyard. Yeah. I think that to me is the most special thing about this park is that we're still under the radar, to the point where we're not overwhelmed with people like a lot of the larger parks, and we're very close to a lot of folks. So it's convenience.
Yeah. And that's, I don't think a lot of people understand my heaven on earth is Guadalupe Mountains. I've been there, you know, I'm in Houston, so I drive the 10 hours. I've been there, I think probably 25 times, but where I'm at in the park, I see nobody. It just almost feels like the park is all mine. Same thing with Caprock. You know, I can see almost the same stuff that I would see at Palo Duro, minus the crowds. And, you know, to the listeners and to anybody who knows me, I'm a huge fan of these smaller parks where you still get, and sometimes I would even argue, a better experience, better views. You have the peace of, you know, that versus some of these bigger parks where you're waiting in lines or you're trying to get to the visitor center and, you know, there's a line out the door and it's, you know, you get frustrated. So I think we've talked about this a little bit before we started the podcast, is that's one of my main goals, especially reaching out to the smaller parks, is to let the listeners know there's alternatives. And I guarantee you that you're going to be probably more satisfied visiting these parks than you would these bigger parks that sometimes, and I've been to a lot of them, it's just a pain.
Yeah, it can be. It can be. I mean, the big parks definitely have their perks. I mean, there are some big, grand, you know, natural features there that you just can't get anywhere else. You know, your Palo Duros and your Garners, and your Caddo Lakes, you know, those places don't look anywhere else. But I'm glad to hear you mention things like places like Caprock. You know, I think about like anytime you go visiting like a major city, you know, it's something that, you know, savvy tourists will often ask is like, okay, where do the locals go to eat? You know, those are the places I want to experience, right? You know, right. A pretty common thing, like I want to get to the heart of the city. And, you know, I have a lot of friends and colleagues, you know, that use the smaller parks. You know, we all use our state parks, and you know, for recreation. You know, even outside of work, we still go visit parks. And you know, when you think about like, well, where do the park rangers go? You know, those answers are more often places like Caprock and, you know, Martin Creek Lake and the smaller parks. For that very reason, you know, there's these little hidden gems that we just love to go see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how would you describe the feel of the park compared to other East Texas spots?
Gotcha. So, you know, you're from Houston. So, you know, you probably, when I say East Texas, you know, what's the environment that comes to mind for you? What do you picture in your mind?
Golly, I would. Martin Dies.
Yeah. Martin Dies. Great park. Yeah.
Mission Tejas. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of associate more like an East Texas vibe.
Yeah. A lot of people would say, you know, Piney Woods, you know, you think East Texas, you think, you know, Pine Curtain, you're up there in the pine trees, the tall loblollies, you know, that's true. You know, for us, you know, we're on the kind of the Western, we're in Western East Texas. And so we're not in the Piney Woods. We're in a, what we call post oak savanna. So our tree cover is primarily hardwoods, oak varieties of oaks, you know, walnut, hickory, that sort of thing. And so, you know, it's a different vibe visually, maybe than your East Texas parks, but where you have that similarity is, especially out on our trails, is you still have that great dense forest cover to hike in. You know, things are nice and shady. You feel totally immersed. You know, you can be, you know, 200 feet from the road and feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere and completely on your own, you know, in a good way. You know, so for that reason, you know, it's a great combination of kind of your East Texas dense forest vibe, but you still have in our day use areas and on the lake, you still have that North Texas lakes and oak trees, oak savanna aesthetic, you know, visually.
In your experience, what kinds of visitors seem to fall in love with Purtis Creek? You know, hikers, anglers, campers?
Well, you know, all three, of course. Now, you know, this park, you know, when it was built and it opened to the public in 1988, you know, this park was built for the fishermen in mind. This lake was created. It was stocked with bass. We work very closely with our fisheries in Athens, and our wildlife division work really hard to stock this lake with good bass. We participate in the Sharelunker program. For your listeners unfamiliar, you know, it's a breeding program for bass to produce large, you know, world-class size bass. So the fishing here is great. Always has been, not just for bass, you know, catching crappie off the pier at night. Is a favorite pastime of a lot of our regulars. Catfish up by the dam in the deep end. You know, even just getting the kids out and catching bluegills and perch and stuff off the shallow shores. You know, fishing is a big draw. So a lot of our visitors come here for that specifically. But we do have a fair amount of people that come for the trails. Trails are always a big draw at any state park, and we're no different. So we have 5 miles of trail in the park. And it's relatively easy elevation-wise. There's not a lot of up and down, not a lot of strenuous, arduous areas. So, you know, we get quite a lot of folks that use our trails for a nice, relaxing hike. And like I said earlier, you know, you're in some pretty dense foliage back in there. And so it really feels nice and private as you hike along. And then the camping, you know, we're close to Canton, so we tend to get a lot of folks especially on the first weekend of the month. This is their spot to stop when they come in for the Canton trade days. Just go down there and shop and travel for the weekend. So we typically get an increase in camping visitation, overnight visitation on those weekends. But I think primarily who we're serving are those people, like I said, in those major metropolitan areas like DFW. You know, we're a very close, convenient spot to just kind of get away. You know, we're a really convenient spot for peace and quiet. No. So they come out to our camping loop and they enjoy their peace and quiet.
You know, one thing I love about these smaller state parks, and let's say you're a new hiker or you're new backpacker, is they're small enough where you can print out a map or pick one up at the visitor center and really play around with putting trails together. Like, you know, you're not going to get lost if you don't have a lot of map reading experience. You know, it's a safe way to play around with that and connect trails together, but also knowing that, you know, you're not going to get lost and, you know, you're going to probably cross a road or something every few miles or so, or even less. But it's just, to me, a great way to introduce yourself to the outdoors and start to gain some experience in some of these aspects of our way of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And Purtis, I love the way our trails are designed because, like you said, we have 5 miles of trail, but at least every mile you have somewhere to stop, you know, and it's crossing a road or it's coming on a parking area or it's intersecting with another trail. So you really do have the opportunity, especially if you're, you know, just beginning to hike or, you know, or start to slow down and can't maybe hike as far as you used to be able to, you have that opportunity to really say, okay, I can try this section. And then if that feels good, I can go on another section without knowing that it's going to take me off on some 22-mile, you know, odyssey. You know, you're always going to have a spot to come back to and be like, okay, that's just enough. You can do that here at our park and for all of our trails.
Nice. So to the visitors, what what kind of outdoor experience can they expect across the different seasons?
Across the different seasons. So you'll find, you know, like I said earlier, my favorite time to hike is in the fall. So, you know, that you've got a lot of, you know, a lot of atmosphere, a lot of leaves falling, leaf litter on the ground. You've got the trees are dropping. The colors are great. You know, it's nice and cool, typically cooler. So you're going to see a lot of variety as you hike, a lot of atmosphere. And of course, you know, wildlife, we've got a real healthy deer population out here. So your chances of spotting deer moving through the brush are pretty good. You're going to see a lot of wildlife moving around. You know, your typical armadillos and raccoons and things of that nature. You know, in the winter, you know, there's a lot of folks that like to come out in the winter, like to see that kind of mist coming off of the lake as you hike along the shoreline. You know, the foliage is largely dropped by then, so you get a lot more open view and not feel as claustrophobic in some of those more densely vegetated areas, so it feels a little bit more open. So that's got its charm too. Spring, of course, we're, you know, thanks to the work of our natural resources, we've got a lot of areas, pocket prairies and things like that. We do regular prescribed burns through our fire team and have done a lot to, you know, cut back on the invasive species and allow a lot of the native species to flourish. There's a lot of diversity of vegetation in our understory in the forested areas, out in our little pocket prairies that we've got. And those wildflowers really shine, you know, about mid-spring. And we'll continue on into the summer. If you haven't seen a whole field just full of partridge pea, these beautiful yellow flowers, or the May apples, you know, blooming underneath the forest canopy, springtime is the time to get out and see that. Lots of color. And then, of course, the summertime, you know, things get a little warmer. So pack plenty of water. But you're going to get, like I said, that I like that cozy experience, that feeling that brush is fully fleshed out, it's nice and thick, and you're out there in this really enclosed environment, fully immersive environment, where it just feels like you're miles from anywhere. And it's a great little private hike, and there's areas back there where you'll be hiking through some dense foliage, maybe with a lot of yaupon and greenbrier and things along the sides, and then you take a turn and you open up to an area that may have been recently burned, and you just have this great open view through the trees, you know, and can see for quite a long ways, just the natural elevation and the foliage. Pretty awesome. Those little aha moments that you get when you're hiking around, you know, we've got a couple of those hiding back there.
Nice. So what are some of the feedback that you've heard from guests that really kind of make you step back and go, you know, we're doing things right here?
Ah, well, so something that we kind of have put our focus on here at PURTIS is that we feel like this park has a great opportunity to really work on improving our park for accessibility, for access. And when I got here a year and a half ago, we really started getting a plan together to say, okay, you know, our mission is to provide outdoor recreational opportunities for all visitors, for present and future generations, you know, and that's without exception. So how can we make this place, you know, what we call universal design, so anyone, regardless of ability, can take advantage of what PURTIS Creek has to offer? And that kind of has become the focus and the vision for our team, is that when we look at upgrading facilities or doing programs or improving the park experience, we're going to have that in mind. It's like, how many people can use this feature, you know, and access this feature? So, you know, we got to it and, you know, we've been creative with how we go about it. You know, I have a small staff, so we can't do everything ourselves, but we've partnered with volunteer organizations. We've partnered with local communities and, you know, to get people out here working in the park. And one feature that we had, as we were working on it, we were getting feedback on it because people were walking up and asking what we were doing, is we created a trailhead at the Wolf Pen Green Trailhead. We improved that surface in a way using decomposed granite and a product called dirt glue, which is a polymer that you mix with the substrate in it. basically cures to like an asphalt-like surface. It's very low maintenance, very durable, and very flat and level. So people with mobility challenges, you know, people in wheelchairs, people that might not be as active, you know, have mobility challenges, you know, can access the trail, begin to access the trail. We'll continue improvements on that. So as we were out there working on it, you know, people were coming up. We had a lady come up and ask what we were doing. I was explaining to her the process, and she said, oh, well, you know, I'm the den mom of a Boy Scout troop that is all wheelchair and physical disabilities, Boy Scout troop. And she, you know, she's like, I just love this. I love that you're doing this, because now I can have a place to bring them. They can come out and they can access a trail that they might not have been able to access before.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been very fulfilling. Still got a lot of projects ahead of us, a lot of things we want to do, but we're slowly chipping away at it. That's our goal. We're laser focused on it.
Nice. So can you share any other recent improvement projects that you've had at the park?
Yeah. Like I said, we've done a lot in regards to universal design and accessibility. So we've, aside from the trailhead, we use the same product to upgrade three of our campsites for ADA access. So we had one that was already ADA accessible, and we made the decision to convert three more. Two of them are finished. One more is still coming along. We had to take a break with the summer visitation, wait for it to slow down again if we can get back on it. But we use that same decomposed granite and dirt glue to provide a nice level flat surface. Installed some fire rings that raise the fire bed up for wheelchair access, so the burn surface is higher up, you know, ADA picnic tables and things like that. So now we have those places available to them. We did the same in our day use area. We have a rentable pavilion, like a picnic pavilion, used for like, you know, Boy Scout groups or family reunions, large groups that have a space. We improved the area around the fire ring there for ADA access as well. And we've got more projects coming in the future. This fall, we're going to start looking at our fishing pier. We're going to get right now it's just a grass lawn out to the fishing pier. We want to provide that same pathway with the dirt glue out to the fishing pier, and then drop some of the rails down to so folks that can be able to fish from a seated height instead of standing. You know, then you have fishing access for folks that might need a little bit of accommodation.
Wow, that's amazing.
We're having fun with it, and we're doing a lot, getting a lot of feedback from our visitors on that too. So it's not just us saying, okay, we want to go forward with this. We've had visits from groups. One example is we had the National Institute for the Blind of Texas did their first ever overnight stay in a state park with us. That was back in March. And so you have a large group of people, many of whom are totally blind. Most have some level of visual impairment, and I just had a great time interacting with them, seeing what kind of adaptive equipment they use, getting feedback from them about what they'd like to see in the park and the challenges they face in navigating around state parks, coming up with creative solutions to accommodate that. I've got some things in the works that we're looking at on the state level that I think would be pretty good improvements and pretty simple to implement universally. That's still in the I guess analyzation phase. So they're looking at it, seeing if that's feasible. But I think that there are things we can do in the way of like marking trailheads, wayfinding out in the field physically for people with visual impairments that I think could really open up parks for those folks.
Wow. So just to kind of take a step back, and maybe you touched on it, but can you speak to the park's focus on these types of projects? Like, was there something that kind of kicked it off, or has this always been something dear to your heart where, you know, you just came in and said, this has got to be done. And it's wonderful to hear all the stuff that you guys are doing, for sure.
Yeah. It's been really fulfilling. But yeah, I guess there's two things that kind of kicked it off. The more recent thing and the more immediate was that, a couple of years back, the agency, Texas Parks and Wildlife Agency, hired a third-party group to come in and evaluate our sites for ADA access. And from that survey came a report. Every park got one. Most of them were pretty thick because they really went through every park with a fine tooth comb, just identifying, you know, potential issues, you know, I mean, down to the gaps in the joints between poured concrete in a sidewalk, you know, like gaps more than a quarter inch, you know, identifying that, hand dryers that protrude into the walking space, you know, little things that most people wouldn't notice, but really do have an effect on the folks that, that impacts. Things like, you know, raising a sign height, the raining, making sure grab bars and the ADA stalls are the right height, the restrooms, you know, very, very minute details. You know, some were small, some were very large issues, some were issues that, you know, due to the nature of the facility or the building, you can't do much for it. A lot of parks have historical buildings that you really can't modify. You know, that provides an interesting challenge. But every park got one of those surveys. And there's been a push from the agency to really, like, start chipping away at those. And, you know, so a lot of the parks are moving on that. I'm sure you'll hear this topic again in your future podcast, if you haven't already heard about it in other podcasts. It's near and dear to a lot of our hearts. But that gave us, you know, kind of the catalyst to be like, okay, now we have a list. We have something physical we can look at, check off, and start working on. And so a lot of parks have taken that and run with it. Personally, you know, the reason why I kind of glommed onto this as a really good way to do something good is, you know, an anecdote from my childhood. I'll just tell a little story here. So when I was a kid, we were pretty active in a church in Houston, and my mother signed us up as to be, it was a ministry that was in service to members of that church that had mobility issues and issues getting to church. So two Sundays out of the month, my mom would load me and my brother up, and we'd drive over to Scott Morris's house. And Scott was a fellow, he was in his 30s at the time, and he was wheelchair bound, nonverbal, you know, but sharp as a whip. And he could communicate through a form of 20 questions, yes or no questions. He's a super sweet guy, man. I really lost touch with him after I grew up, but, you know, he was really cool. And it was a really cool experience for me as a kid, because on the one hand, you know, I was 8 or 9, that situation can make you a little uncomfortable. Like, okay, this is a strange situation, you know, to go to this person's house and, you know, have to help them into this van and ride with them and, you know, come up with a different way of communicating, you know, so that he can feel understood and to have that time and intention and patience to really communicate with him. And it had a big impact with me as a kid because, you know, I ended up realizing this is Scott's a person like anyone else, you know, like I developed a relationship with him, you know, to tie it back to relationship.
Right.
Yeah, I developed a relationship with this guy, you know, and then I moved on and you know, grew up and went about my adult life and you know, parted ways. But that's always been a part of my childhood that kind of sunk in with me. It's like, man, that was something that I didn't appreciate at the time. But looking back now, I can see that interaction, that relationship, like stuck with me. So when this ADA push came around to the parks, like the first name that popped in my head was like, what if Scott Morris showed up at my park today? You know, what could I show him? What could we do? You know, and that's what kind of drove it home for me. You know, it became personal.
Yeah. You know, I think this dates back to early 90s or late 80s, but so I'm a Guadalupe Mountain. I'll drive right now and come back home tomorrow. I love that place. But there's a ranger there, Leah. She gives a presentation, and if she hears this, she's going to kill me for not remembering the name. But there's a YouTube video, and it's called Assault on the Mountain. And it's about five gentlemen in wheelchairs that climbed the highest peak in Texas, Guadalupe Mountains. I think it took them 5 days.
Awesome.
And at the time, the park ranger there ended up being the director of the National Park Service, you know, later on. But, you know, he supported them, carried beers up there for them, you know, mm-hmm. like, and, you know, I think they even had like these military helicopters picked him up off the summit when they finally made it. Anyway, she gives this presentation, and back then to that park ranger, it was important for him, you know, about the accessibility. And anyway, they I think three of the five made it. You know, she's given this presentation. I'm in tears. She's in tears. But if you go to Guad, you have to ask for Leah and ask to, when she's going to give the presentation. You can check out. They did like an 80s style, you know, back then, not movie, but like reporter type thing, kind of a documentary. Oh, cool. It's Assault on the Mountain. But after they got down, one of the gentlemen in the wheelchair told the park ranger to sit in the wheelchair, and then, you know, kind of like what you just said, like you try to navigate this park in the wheelchair. And I think that really, you know, spurred from the Guads to start looking at some of these points of accessibility and making them more friendly for everybody. So it's an amazing story. And if you're ever in the Guads, you have to find Leah and say, when are you going to give that presentation?
Yeah, I'll look that up for sure. You know, one thing I like to see, a lot of parks are really heavily promoting them, or the accessibility equipment that you're starting to see pop up in a lot of the parks. So, you know, the track chairs, the electronic track chairs, the beach chairs that allow people to get out in the water and the swimming areas, and the grit wheelchairs. We have one here at our park, the self-propelled, you know, off-road wheelchair. And, you know, we promote the heck out of it. You know, a lot of parks, even the small parks, you know, we've got them, you know, we just, all you got to do is ask, you know, free to loan for the day, and they can really provide you access to spots that you might not think you could get to.
Does the Park Service allow you the freedom for these projects, or is it pretty much that kind of they mandate what they want? Or, and then also, when you have something that you find is successful, like, we did this, are you able to share with other parks, or you guys are in constant communication with some of these awesome projects?
Oh, absolutely. You know, our trailhead project got a lot of traction with other parks, and I'm a big believer in, like, I'm not afraid to try new things and be kind of the guinea pig park. You know, we made the decision to go all in on ADA and universal design. And so with that comes kind of the obligation, really, to try things out for the sake of the other parks and find out what works and what doesn't. You know, I'm not afraid to fall on my face and fail on something and say, well, that didn't work. You know, let's try something else, and communicate that with the other parks. We had, when we finished that trailhead project, we had four other parks, three from our region here in East Texas, and one from all the way down in your neck of the woods, Village Creek, had a project they thought that dirt glue product would work on, and they made the trip up here to take a look at it. We showed it to them and told them what we found, what worked, what didn't, you know, the best practices for mixing it and putting it down, and the things that we discovered didn't work so well. Yeah, there's a lot of collaboration at the superintendent level, at the park level, you know, because if things are working for us, I want to see it everywhere. You know, I want to share it. And I want, you know, I want it to highlight the park and the agency, you know, so, you know, I don't care about it. If I get credit, I care about that it's out there in the parks and that people can use it. Now, I mean, we can get in the weeds. I mean, when you ask, is that pretty easy to do, or do I have a lot of free rein to do projects? I have some. I mean, we have policies and procedures that we have to go by, but they're not very restrictive. But, I mean, it's important that when someone, you know, in my park has an idea for something to do in the park, that it goes through our natural resources department or cultural resources department. They have a chance to review it, look at it, make sure it's not going to impact anything that they're in charge of. You know, our park planning division in department in Austin, you know, if you're going to put something in a park or add a feature, does it look like the rest of the park, the aesthetic, you know, they're big on the term view shed, you know, does it interfere with the view shed, with the visual experience of being in park, you know, does it look out of place? You know, these are all considerations, you know, and besides, does it make monetary, you know, financial sense, budgetary sense, you know, that of course too, because we have to be responsible stewards of the taxpayer dollars that keep us operating.
No.
So, yeah, so there's a few hoops that we jump through, and a few forms and things that we fill out, and it, you know, it prevents us from like jumping right in and getting to work, but it's not restrictive in the sense of that I don't feel like I have control over putting ideas out there. Even they may, some of them may get shut down, that's fine, you know, but it's not going to keep me from thinking up new stuff and different ways and creative ways to get things done to improve the visitor experience. That's the goal.
Yeah. And I think also like at your level and your responsibility, the park, I mean, all you can ask for is you just have someone to listen, you know, and that you have a sounding board or you have a process that doesn't limit the ideas. And like you said, they may not get approved, but at least someone's listening and give it some thought. So that's nice to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, an example of that, going back to what I was talking about, the visually impaired, I had a great conversation with one of the participants in the Institute for the Blind of Texas when they came to camp. And she does kind of a blog, a travel blog for people with visual impairments and kind of tips and tricks to get around in parks independently. And that conversation with her really brought out the kind of need for something physical at trailheads. This was something that she brought to my attention. She's like, it's really hard to find trailheads a lot of the time in parks because every one of them is different. They're all unique. You know, most of the time parks have paper maps, but nothing that someone with visual impairments can use to orient themselves. Those are only just now starting to come out. And,
yeah,
you know, so it's really hard to know when you're at the trailhead sometimes. And the suggestion that she brought to mind, and this is something that I've thrown up the chain that's kind of started the conversation on, is you take those physical panels that you see a lot of, you see them a lot at crosswalks in the cities. You know, they're those dimpled paved panels on the ground that have the little round stubs on them. And it's a textured surface, and that's a pretty economic way to, you know, have those at a trailhead and be a good physical confirmation that yes, you are indeed at a trailhead, you know, for someone with visual impairment. You know, in my opinion, I think that'd be a pretty simple thing to install in most places. So now we're starting the conversation of, okay, you know, what does that look like? And if we are going to go that route, you know, it'd be great if we could do it agency wide so that you have this universal common experience from park to park. You know, I could do that just here at Purtis and see what it looks like, or we could try to get that instituted park, you know, statewide. You know, that's only going to improve the experience for visitors with that particular need, because then they'll know from park to park, you know, that same texture will mean, yes, this is a trailhead. So yeah, little ideas like that.
And we'll get into it a little bit later, but like to the listeners, like this, and it's kind of what I talked about, you know, in some previous episodes with Marion Outdoors, just supporting local businesses that support our community. I mean, just listening to everything that you're doing at your park or other state parks that are looking at these types of these projects, as someone that is a hiker, backpacker, someone that's in the community, how can you not want to get involved, whether it's making a donation, whether it's volunteering? So hopefully to the listeners that you know, you guys are hearing this and the wonderful projects, and this would facilitate you donating some time and or, you know, financially supporting some of these projects, because, you know, it's absolutely refreshing to hear. All right, so as we kind of start to dive into some hiking trails and what it means to hike at the park, what are some of your favorite recommended first-time hiker or with family with small kids trails that our listeners should know about?
Yeah, so, you know, all of our trails are pretty easy and pretty well suited for, you know, families with young kids or first-time hikers. You know, they're all pretty level. If I had to pick, one of my favorites is the Beaver Slide Trail. the Beaver Slide Trail is about a mile long, mile and a half, if you do the whole thing. And it also serves as kind of our primitive camping loop. So we have a hike-in campsites where you can pack in. No water, no electricity, just real camping, as my mother used to say. Roughing it. And so we've got 12 of those sites out there. But that loop, it starts in our camping, in our water and electric campsite loop. The trailhead starts there, and the first part of it follows along this little cove on the shoreline. There's a little bird viewing blind or wildlife viewing blind that we have there. I'd say more often it's more of a turtle viewing blind than bird blind, but you see all kinds of variety of wildlife there. There's beaver that live out in that area that you see on occasion. And it's just a nice little easy level hike that follows the shoreline for about half of it, and then it curves back into the woods. So that second half of it is more of a woodland forest environment. And so you kind of get two different aspects of the park in one short hike. That's pretty easy for beginners and good for kids with small legs and not too far out there. So, you know, you're not too far away from access or getting back to your car. That to me is like the best beginner.
What about, are there any kind of hidden gems or scenic spots that the visitors should not miss?
Yeah, a spot I love is on our Blue Trail. So our Blue Trail is our longest trail. It's about 3 miles, 2 miles, excuse me, 2 miles. And we actually scoped this spot out for one of our visitors who is a regular hiker. She and her husband and her son don't miss a hiking program that our interpreter Jenna does. And this is going to be a long story to tell, but it really speaks to this spot. Her husband unfortunately passed away this past year, and she wanted to do something to A, honor him, and B, do something for the park. And the Blue Trail was his favorite spot to hike, and there was always a spot, you know, the farthest point of the Blue Trail where he's like, man, it'd be nice if there was like a bench here just to sit and catch your breath and, you know, before you hike back. So she wanted to, you know, she approached me about the possibility of doing some sort of park bench out there to commemorate him. And I had just happened, the way this came together was kind of fated. I just happened to have spoken with an Eagle Scout, local Eagle Scout that was looking for a project to do. And I said, well, this is perfect. I said, I have this woman who's a regular visitor to the park that wants to do this bench. Let me put you two together. My only request, and I'll provide, you know, all the stats and approvals and specs and things that, you know, and advice. My only request is that we add some sort of accessibility aspect. And so we decided to meet up one day, and we went to drive the Blue Trail and scope out a potential spot. I had my little satellite GIS map on my phone, my Avenza app out, and we were tracking and, you know, marking potential locations. And it's like, well, this might do. And we got exactly to the halfway point of the Blue Trail. And we're kind of following along this fence line where they've been doing some on our boundary, where they've been doing some resource work. And the trail turns back into the woods, goes in, and then kind of switches back. So as soon as you make that bend, you're back in one of those spots I was talking about where you feel you're just like out in the middle of nowhere, right? And there in front of us was like, I heard her gasp in the seat next to me. the wife, she went, and I said, okay, we found our spot. Because it was just kind of at the top of this little rise. It was overlooking this area that gets pretty frequent resource management. So the understory is pretty clear. It's not overgrown. And it's perfectly shaded spot under this large cedar tree with a beautiful view for quite some distance through this forest setting with some gentle rises and hills and a little ditch there. And it was the most beautiful view on that spot and on that trail. And really about the only spot, because almost immediately around the next bend, it gets thick again. So it's really the only spot that you could put a bench, and it's just perfectly situated, perfectly oriented direction-wise, so the sun's not in your eyes any time of the day, and just a beautiful view. And I was like, well, that does it. That's the spot. So wow. We're now in the process of designing the bench. And then we've gone through the approval process and going to be installing a bench in that spot so that in the future, hopefully in the near future, everyone will be able to get to that spot and just sit and take it in for.
Oh, nice. That was a great story.
Yeah, it all came together, man. It was really good.
So how would you describe the fishing and paddling experience at Purtis Creek?
Oh man, the fishing, like I said, it's world class. So let's see, today is August 19th. So just in this month alone, we had, and this is just what's been reported to us, not everyone tells us when catching, we've had an 8.5 pound bass caught off of our fishing pier in our day use area. We had another young man, his first fishing experience out here with his grandfather, almost netted, he says, claims it had to have been at least 9 pounds out of the reeds up close to the dam. You know, the bass, you know, that's just this month. And that's just what's been told to us. Fishing is wonderful most of the time. But when they're hitting, they're really hitting. We've got some really good world-class size bass out there if you like a good fight. So there are people, you know, we're pretty close to Cedar Creek Reservoir. A few people in our community that choose to come here because they can get really quality fishing with some good fighting bass without all the wakes and, you know, wake borders and giant, you know, loud, noisy instruments, because we're a no-wake lake. So you don't have a lot of water skiers out here to fish all day long. Fishing is great. And then the same goes for paddling. Just the topography that they built this lake in lends itself to have, there's a lot of nice little coves back in. And one of my favorite spots when I'm out there paddling, it's actually a small island towards the north end of the lake. Not a lot of people make it that far out. Get out to there on the southernmost point of that little island. There's a bench, a wooden bench that's been constructed. So you can paddle on out there and stop and get out, sit on that bench, enjoy the view from the other direction. Not a lot of people get to see. And then it's a good paddle, about a mile paddle back.
So with all the visitors, how do you handle educating them to like any leave no trace principles or, you know, trail respect?
Yeah, sure. So one is we have a park interpreter at this site. Her name is Jenna. She does a great job. Ranger Jenna really dedicated herself to doing a lot of great programs. She's active and she's intentional. She reaches out to a lot of local groups, homeschoolers, you know, things like that. Has a look good, great social media presence. If you want to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, she's very active on those. And that message is on repeat. You know, we talk about leaving no trace, leaving the place better than you found it. You know, all those principles that come with good, responsible camping and hiking. So that's phase one. That's one phase of it. Another thing that I do at every park I've worked, where I've had the honor of being in charge of staff and having people working under me, is really pressing home the lead by example. So, you know, when it comes to litter in state parks, you know, visitors are more likely to litter when they see litter. When they see a nice, clean park, they're less likely. Or when you have trash cans spaced appropriately, you know, not completely overwhelming the day use area with lots of trash cans, but if you have a few dumpsters strategically placed, have the area nice and clean on a regular basis, it's going to give that people just that second to like, okay, where's the trash can? And then they're actively thinking about where to put their trash, and they're looking and they see the dumpster and they say, okay, that's just a short walk over there, and they place it. My motto ever since I came out of the field was never drive past the same piece of trash twice. So if you see something on the side of the road and you're on the way to do something, that's fine. But if you're coming back and you know it's there, you know, grab that thing. Best way to prevent a park from getting overwhelmed with litter is to set that example. And we do the same with our park hosts, our volunteers that live on site and help us with our, you know, site maintenance and our customer interaction. You know, the expectation for them is that, hey, you know, you're right here in the public view and your site is your homestead and should be the best example of how to set up camp at our park, you know. And so it should be clean and orderly and not full of litter. We're setting a good example for our guests. That's going to go a lot farther than pointing to signs and you know, referencing park rules and regulations. You know, that example makes a better impact.
Yeah, it's amazing when I go out hiking on the Lone Star Hiking Trail, and it's usually at the trailheads, but I find a lot on the trails is how much trash I pick up. Like one time, I have a super Outback, the whole back part of it was full of trash. And I was just like, come on, like, can we be better?
Yeah, I've almost ruined myself getting into this industry because, you know, I can't help but when I'm walking a trail, even just out with my family or out visiting other parks, you know, I'm out there and that's all I'm doing is I'm looking for cigarette butts and water bottles and leaving space in my pack to put trash in because I can't turn it off. It's been 14 years ingrained.
Yep. Or like I'm in the quads and I see orange peels off trail and I'm like, oh my God.
It's like, yeah, they're natural, but think about the time it takes. You know, someone's going to be here before that thing degrades.
Yep. So two questions. What is the best way for the listeners to get connected to the park, to see when the community events are, ranger programs throughout the year?
Yeah. So like I said, Jenna, follow us on Facebook, Instagram. Jenna, our park interpreter, she posts every month. She posts the programs for that month, times and dates of what she has scheduled. She also, one thing I love that she does, she started a newsletter that also comes out monthly that kind of highlights not just the programs, but what's going on in our park. So if we have like a new hire, you know, we'll highlight that person. We'll talk about what, celebrate wins that we've done in our park, improvements or milestones. You know, usually there's like a little nature moment in there to talk about what's happening, you know, ecologically in the park at this given time of year. It really has done a great job of like fleshing out what the complexity of this operation in this space beyond just the scheduled programming that she does. So I encourage people to follow us on there and give that newsletter a read. When I have the opportunity, I usually write in a little superintendent blurb, you know, I'll wax philosophical or talk about mission or, you know, do something along those lines in there too, just to kind of speak to that broader, that higher cause that we're working for, you know.
So what is the best way for groups, schools, volunteers to get involved in the park?
Yeah. Reach out to me or Jenna. They can contact the park directly at our office. We're open from 8:15 to 4:30 every day. I'm also available. My phone and my email, or you know, those are public records. I'm happy to share those out, and people can contact me directly. I point you to our volunteer page on the TPWD website. We create opportunities regularly. You know, we have. You know, when you think of volunteers in state parks, a lot of people think of the Park Host Program, which is a great program that allows, you know, people to come live on site in exchange for, you know, 20 to 30 hours of work a week to help us out. We rely on our volunteers. We couldn't do what we do without them. It's a great program. There's also opportunities for people that, you know, maybe don't want to pull a trailer out here, but want to come for the day. And, you know, if you just want to come out and hike the trails and pick up trash while you're hiking, you know, we can count that. We can get you in our system and we can log those hours, and that benefits you and us because we have a good tracking system for the amount of work and labor it takes to maintain this place. You know, there are perks to volunteering and logging those hours. So we have those opportunities. We have opportunities. We have volunteers that come out and help Jenna with her interpretive programs. And we have partnerships with volunteer programs that are independent from parks. One of my favorite partnerships, and I'll plug them because they're worth plugging, is the Get Outside Alliance. They're a Houston-based volunteer organization, nonprofit. They do a lot of good work in a lot of state parks, particularly in the Houston area. They've done a lot of trail work with Huntsville, cleaning up after the hurricanes, damage, flooding. They're a great organization. They're committed to doing work in state parks, getting local people, recruiting locally, getting them out in their state parks and doing work. And Spencer Frith, who's the head of that organization, he and I really came together on the ADA and accessibility front. And so at PURTIS, we started a campaign called Parks for All. And a lot of these projects I've been talking about, like our trailhead, our fish and pier coming up in September, these are projects that we've organized in partnership with them. So they are doing all the recruiting locally and providing, you know, manual labor for us, extra hands, and we're getting a lot of work done that we wouldn't be able to do on our own. So it's been a really, really good partnership. People can look them up if they want to volunteer through them. They post their tasks, you know, at any state park they're working at. It doesn't have to be mine, but they have, you know, you sign up through them and they kind of make it really easy. You don't have to think or plan or do. You can just sign up. And they'll give you all the information about when to be and where to be, and they'll provide all the gear to do it. So it's an easy way to volunteer.
So I think this is an interesting question. What is something that you would love to see more of in terms of community support?
right now I'm actively in pursuit of a friends group for this park. Your listeners that are familiar with state parks might know of some state parks that have friends groups. Friends groups are nonprofit organizations that partner with state parks as a great way to advocate for the park and the community, a great way to fundraise for the park. They're really good. A good friends group is a really effective way to get projects done in the park that directly affect the visitor experience. I would love to, for instance, upgrade our playground in our day use area to something more universally accessible. A friends group would be a great way to advocate for that, fundraise for it, and you get that going. Because sometimes it can be pretty difficult budgetarily for small parks to do things like that, primarily budgetarily, because I've got a limited operating budget to make this entire park run. Sometimes I don't have the funding to do that. So having a friends group available to generate and augment those funds is very useful. So we're in the process of reaching out with the community. I've done a lot of talks at Rotary clubs and chambers of commerce and, kind of building those relationships. Like I said, it all starts with relationships, getting that trust going and starting to generate enough interested people that we're going to have an interest meeting here in October 3rd in Gun Barrel City, town right down the road, to see what we can do to generate that friends group.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah, the community outreach is important. We started implementing a lot of programs that haven't been done in a few years here at Purtis Creek that are more community oriented. So whereas the educational programming is our bread and butter, bring people into the park, teach them about things, teach them about the flora and the fauna, as you will. I think it's also equally important to do the kind of fun events like holiday oriented stuff. We started doing a Christmas event in early December where we waive the campsite fees and the entry fees for people that decorate their site. And we have a sign-up sheet. And it turns the whole camping loop into this big drive-through Christmas light extravaganza. And
oh wow!
If you want to come drive through and look at the lights, we'll waive your entry fee if you donate a brand new in-the-box toy. And then we take those toys and we take them to our local Blue Santa Police Department charity, like Henderson County Sheriff's Department does. So we're giving back to the community. We're also providing just something fun, just to bring people in, connect them, and to participate with them in something just fun and enjoyable. I think that's equally as important as the educational ones. And we can add little educational elements to it, the interpretational elements to it. But, relationship building is part of the mission, in my opinion. And those really help to do that. So bringing those back have been really well received.
How important is it for people in the region to have access to places like this, like Purtis Creek?
Oh, extremely important. We're in a region of Texas, like I said, that's pretty heavily populated and has been for a very long time. If you want to go all the way back to pre-European, this place has been continuously occupied, continuously developed, for thousands of years. There aren't many places in Texas. We don't have a whole lot of public land in Texas. 98% of our lands are privately owned. So to have this 2% of land that we can preserve and protect, it's a legacy. It's something, it's an heirloom that we have to pass on to future generations. If that goes away, it's gone. There's no replacing it. There's no bringing it back. So it's important to have these areas in places like Purtis that are close to heavily populated areas, just so people see and have access, ease of access to these places. You don't have to drive across Texas to access these places. There's some beautiful places 10 hours away, like you say, in the Panhandle and out in West Texas. I love those places. I'll keep going out to them. But you don't have to. You have places near you that you can get to. You have your Purtis Creek State Parks and your Huntsville State Parks, Cedar Hills and your Sheldons. You have these places right in your own backyard that are your heritage, your birthright. They're being protected for your sake, for you to use and appreciate, and Lord willing, become stewards of and participate in.
Yeah, I think society's kind of gotten away from this, but there's so many life lessons to learn. Getting outdoors and experiencing nature and our creation, learning to take care of that, and also understanding if you don't take care of it, you know, what can happen? And I wish in high school or junior high, you had to, you know, every kid had to volunteer at a state park or a national park or put in some time. There was a class that, okay, we're going to meet at Huntsville State Park for the next semester. And just to truly understand the beauty, the diversity that Texas offers. And without us, you know, we could, and we do oftentimes just run these types of places. So,
right. And they can get loved to death too. It's not just the people that are, that don't care. You know, some of these places are for people that do care in their way, and they want to visit them and use them, but it hasn't sunk in, you know, the impact. You know, they view it as a fun recreational space and you know, don't necessarily recognize the impact that they're having on it, you know, or that many people.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right about nature. I think the most important thing I learned just from being outside in my own personal experience is that there's this basic principle that encompasses about everything. And then the nature is the best example of it, is that if something works, it stays. And if something doesn't work, it goes away. You know, so to get deep and philosophical about this, do we as humanity, do we want to engage in something that is sustainable? Do we want to live our lives in a way that stays? Or do we want to live our lives in a way that ultimately doesn't work, because the only thing that's going to go away is us? Life will continue. So what part do you want to play in that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so as we start to kind of wrap up, what is one big goal or dream that you have for the park in the next few years?
I would love nothing less. And this is a high goal. I would love nothing less than for Purtis Creek to be known as a destination park for access, you know, universal access. This is a place of that anyone of any need or ability level can be accommodated, and that it is known that Purtis Creek is the place for that. That's the ideal lofty goal. You know, I like to set these ideal goals because every step towards that goal is progress and improvement. Will Purtis Creek be the place that is known for that? Maybe, maybe not. But it is going to have those things, you know, and we'll continue to add those things, you know, as long as I have the ability to have any impact or say on that. I'm just going to continue marching towards that goal.
Nice. I'm not sure if you read the fine print about the acceptance of coming on the podcast, but every guest that I have on the podcast, we have to share the trail at one point. So I will definitely be hitting you up.
Man, you are more than welcome
to come up to the park and check it out.
Absolutely.
So last question. This is your shot to sell the park to the listeners. Again, why should the listeners make Purtis Creek a destination?
Well, because for a couple of reasons, because it's easy, man. We're right here. For most of y'all listening, we are right here. We're a day's drive away. You know, it's an easy, easy weekend. We are the peace and quiet park. We're the good fishing park. You know, my play on words on the name is that, you know, beauty is subjective, but we are objectively the prettiest in the system. But, you know, we're a day's drive away. We're easy to get to. We're nice, easy hikes, nice, peaceful, relaxing place. And if you like fishing, camping, kayaking, and peace and quiet, it's an easy day. So come on out.
Nice. All right, Aaron, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. This has been awesome. And I think I could probably, listening to your philosophy and how you're handling the park, I could probably talk to you for hours. You definitely are doing it right. And so, again, I can't thank you enough. And I've already taken up an hour and a half of your time. So,
hey, yeah,
sorry for that.
I had plenty of time. Don't be sorry at all. Yeah, I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate the opportunity. And yeah, absolutely. I could, once I start getting into the weeds talking about this stuff, I could easily let me talk for hours. But happy to share it. Like I said, happy to have this opportunity to speak with you, man. Come on out and see us.
Absolutely. I'll definitely let you know when I plan to head down. And also, thanks for repping the merch sticker.
Absolutely. It's going to be on my water bottle till it falls off. So come out and see me and you'll see the sticker. Take it with me everywhere I go.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.